Good morning. It's been a wonderful morning so far this morning, and I'm going to invite you to turn with me this morning to Hebrews chapter 3, and we'll begin reading there. And it's in connection with this theme that I've been working with the last number of lessons on putting on the new self, but I'm going to deviate from this text in Colossians 3 and move into Hebrews 3 and then back into the Old Testament this morning to discuss a concept that is in Colossians 3, which is the idea of being thankful. So part of the new man that we put on, the new self that we put on. Oh, thank you, John. Is referenced in verse 15. Of Colossians 3, let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, to which indeed you were called in one body, and be thankful. And then he goes on to talk about the everything we do in word or in deed. We do everything in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. And I know we understand the idea of thanksgiving. We understand the idea of being grateful. But do we really? And are we indeed the way we ought to be in terms of our gratitude towards God? So we're going to focus in on the opposite of gratitude, and that's the idea of complaining. And that's our subject for this morning. And I put up on the headline there, I refuse to complain. That's become my new way of thinking about sin or about anything that I might think wrongly about. I refuse. And it helps me. And if it helps you, then work with that as well. But I refuse to complain. Like I preached the lesson on being angry, and I said, I refuse to be angry. I preached the lesson on lying, and I said, I refuse to be a liar. And that's, I think, the right idea, as Carlton was talking about today, about our holiness. Are we like Jesus Christ? Do we really obey God the way Jesus did? Well, I suspect that Jesus refused to fall prey to the temptations that he endured, don't you? He refused. He simply would not. And so I think this is a great way of thinking about our lives. I refuse to complain. Why? Because I'm commanded to be thankful, commanded to be grateful, and that's the new man that I put on. So everything in my life needs to be filled with gratitude, not complaining. And I think the Israelites are a great example of what we're not supposed to do. We're going to be studying about the Israelites in the wilderness in the VBS on the 27th through the 29th of June, Lord willing. And so I thought this might be a good way of introducing that subject to us, just getting us to start thinking about our VBS and the wilderness wanderings and what we're going to be studying and learning about. And I think also it fits very well with our theme for the year about trusting in God. Because that's exactly the problem that the writer of Hebrews points to in Hebrews chapter 3 that they did not do. So if you'd like to look with me in Hebrews chapter 3. And we could read all of this, but we'll just pick up in verse 16. Hebrews chapter 3 and verse 16 in order to make the point. He says, for who provoked him when they had heard? Indeed, did not all those who came out of Egypt led by Moses? And so we're talking about God's deliverance from Egypt with a mighty hand. And now they're in the wilderness and they're waiting to enter into the promised land. But they provoked him. And so he says in verse 17, with whom was he angry for 40 years? Was it not with those who sinned, whose bodies fell in the wilderness? Well, how did they sin? Well, he sums it up in verse 18 and 19. He says, and to whom did he swear that he would not that they would not enter his rest, but to those who were disobedient? So they disobeyed God. Well, in what sense? Well, he goes on in verse 19 to say, so we see that they were not able to enter in because of unbelief. And the word unbelief there, or the word belief, carries the idea of trust, which fits very well with our theme for the year, trust in the Lord with all of your heart. So they entered in because they didn't trust God. did not enter in because they did not trust God. They did not enter in because of unbelief. Sounds very simply put there, but that's what we're going to explore for a little bit this morning. Is what does he mean when he says unbelief? They did not enter into the promised land because of unbelief. They failed to trust God, and that's what resulted in their ingratitude and their complaining. So that's what I want us to think about this morning. Think about our lives, think about ourselves, the way we conduct ourselves, the way we think, the way we act, the way we go through life. Are we trusting God and therefore being grateful in our lives? Or instead, the converse of that is, do we have discontentment in our heart? Do we have ingratitude in our heart? Are we, in fact, a complainer? And I think that I fall prey to this very easily. Very easily. I hear myself sometimes, and Daryl and I are talking sometimes on the way back from Lottie, and I'll hear myself and I'll say, what in the world am I doing? Complaining, being discontented or unhappy or complaining about people or about circumstances. So I hear that in myself. I see the struggle for that. And so the reminder to be always grateful for what God has done for us is so important. It sounds so simple. It sounds like something just basic. Yeah, we're supposed to be thankful. We're supposed to be grateful. But I think you'd be surprised if you could see things the way God sees things as to how often perhaps you are ungrateful, how often perhaps you are a complainer, how often perhaps you do not trust God in the way you think and in the way you act. So I think this lesson will be very practical for us. And the reason why I think that the idea of complaining needs to be addressed too is because in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, in the list of things that the Israelites did in disobedience to God, one of the things that he mentions, and you'll see why if we look at a chart in just a moment, it was that they complained, constantly complained. And they were destroyed by the destroyer, Paul says. And all these things happened to them as an example, and they were written for our admonition. So we're supposed to learn from their behaviors and what not to do. And so Strong's defines the idea of complaining as murmuring or muttering or grumbling. So it doesn't even have to be something that's vocalized outwardly. It could be just murmuring, mumbling, grumbling, muttering under our breath, or maybe just even in our hearts. We could be complainers without even vocalizing it. And so the idea behind this is discontentment. And that's what I'm suggesting is the idea of a failure to trust God. I think that's the real problem that I have. I think that's the problem most of us have is we suffer in the flesh discontentment, dissatisfaction. We want this, we want that, or we don't want this. We don't want this to happen. We're tired of this. You know, we're unhappy because we don't have this. And so we tend towards complaining, we tend towards muttering, we tend towards discontentment, and that is a failure to trust God. They did not enter in because they did not trust God, and as a result of not trusting God, they became ungrateful, they became murmurers, complainers, and so we're going to look at some of those stories. Look at this chart. And I may not have all of the things up here that need to be looked at, and we're not going to look at all of these this morning, but look at this list of 12 events in the wilderness wanderings of Israel. Most of these events occurred before the 40 years. Were only Numbers chapter 21 and Numbers chapter 25 are at the end of the 40 years. So most of these events are happening in the very early stages of Israel's wilderness wanderings. But you see all of the emphasis there on complaints. They were complaining because they were fearful. They didn't have water. They didn't like the manna that God gave them. Again, water again. They complained against Moses, and God brought fire upon them. They complained about not having meat, and God gave them quail, and a great plague came upon them as a result of that, in God's anger for their complaining. The ultimate complaining was when they rebelled against God and would not enter in to the promised land. So you can see a lot of emphasis here in the Old Testament on the story of Israel in their complaining. So let's look at Exodus chapter 15 to begin with. Exodus chapter 15. I'm going to save Exodus 14, which was the ultimate complaint that Israel made against God. The ultimate distrust of Israel against God was a refusal to enter into the promised land when he commanded them to do so. But we'll look at that at the end. But let's look at Exodus 15. You have Moses and Israel setting out from the Red Sea. So they've been delivered from slavery in Egypt with a mighty hand. You have to class God's deliverance from Egypt as one of the great events in all the Bible. Just pondering it for even a moment, you consider the power and the majesty of God, and you consider this event as the ultimate deliverance. And in fact, this event is used as a foreshadowing of our deliverance through Jesus. Jesus is our Passover. So the night of the Passover, when the angel of death passed over the Israelites while killing the firstborn of all the people of Egypt, even the flocks and herds, the firstborn of all Egypt, and he passed over the Israelites, and God then delivered them with a mighty hand out of slavery, and then opened up the waters of the Red Sea, and they passed through the middle of the Red Sea unscathed. And when they got across, the Red Sea came back down upon the Egyptian armies, and Israel was delivered by the mighty hand of God. Well, you can see up on the board, notice the note. 3 days. 3 days later, after they sang this song in Exodus 15 of deliverance, God's mighty hand delivering them, 3 days later, it says in verse 23, when they came to Marah, they could not drink the water of Marah because it was bitter. Therefore, it was named Marah, which means bitterness. And the people grumbled against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" And he cried to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a log, and he threw it into the water, and the water became sweet. And there the Lord made for them a statute and a rule, and there he tested them, saying, "If you will diligently listen to the voice of the Lord your God, and do that which is right in his eyes, and give ear to his commandments, and keep all his statutes, I will put none of the diseases on you that I put on the Egyptians, for I am the Lord your healer." And then they came to Elim, where there were 12 springs of water and 70 palm streams or trees, and they encamped there by the water. So my point on this is, number one, 3 days later, they're murmuring and complaining against God. But then the second point is that God heard all of that and blessed them anyway. He blessed them anyway. And he said, "I'm going to test you. I want you to obey me. Here's your blessing." So he's already blessed them by delivering them from Egypt. And now he's blessing them more, even in their complaint. So that's the way I see God working in my life. And that's the way he works in your life, too. Sometimes I complain. Sometimes I'm ungrateful. Sometimes I'm discontented. And God blesses me anyway. Praise be to God and thanks be to God that he is so merciful. And that's what he's doing with Israel. And what he's asking them to do is obey him. He's testing them and he's blessing them. That's how he's testing them. He's blessing them in response to their complaining and their murmuring. So they're supposed to get it. They're supposed to understand this is how good God is. This is how much they can trust God. Has God provided for you at times in your life when you didn't deserve it? When you were discontented and complaining, unhappy, or disobedient toward God, untrusting in Him, and yet God has blessed you and carried you through and gotten you to this point in your life. And so God is testing Israel. He wants them to trust Him. And so He blesses them even in their discontent. And so that's the point. With a mighty hand, God has just shown them His powerful salvation. But untrusting and ungrateful, they murmured. Yet God put up with them and blessed them anyway. I'm grateful to God, aren't you? That He is willing to bless me even in my ingratitude, even in my discontentment. And I've got to learn from that. I've got to let God test me. And I've got to learn from that to trust Him and to be grateful to Him. Next event we're going to look at is Exodus chapter 16. We're not going to read all of this in verses 1 through 30. But this is at the wilderness of Sin. The manna, this is when God gives them the manna and the quail. They set out from Elim. All the congregation of the people of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after they had departed from the land of Egypt. So again, very soon. And the whole congregation of the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the people of Israel said to them, "Would that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt when we sat by the meat pots and ate bread to the full. You brought us out of this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." Mercy. Can you imagine that? When we look at that, we say, how unfaithful, how ungrateful, how short-sighted were these Israelites. True. And so have I been. And so have you been. And the Lord has blessed us anyway, because He loves us and wants to test us to see if we will be obedient to Him. And God will meet their needs, but they have to obey Him. Now, that's the rest of the story in Exodus 16. God gives them the manna. God gives them the quail. But what do they have to do? God has instructions about the manna. He says you can gather it for 6 days. And on the sixth day, you gather twice as much as you do on all the other days. And you don't gather any on the seventh day. And you don't leave anything that you gathered on the sixth day. Don't leave it overnight. Never leave the bread overnight. Except on the sixth day, when you collect twice as much, then the seventh morning, you can have the bread that you've collected. So He's testing them to see if they will obey Him. People call that the test Sabbath. That was the Sabbath that the Lord commanded Israel before He gave them the Ten Commandments. And He tested them to see if they would obey Him. So what happened? Well, sure enough, Israel didn't obey God. Sure enough, they left it overnight. What happened? It turned into worms and maggots. And then on the seventh day, when they got up, they had bread that they had collected on the sixth. God continued to bless them, even though they disobeyed Him. They wanted God's blessings, but they refused to submit to God's rules. That's the principle that I'm getting out of this particular story. They wanted God's blessings, and God blessed them. He gave them the manna. He gave them the quail. They wanted God's blessings, but they refused to submit to God's rules. Is that me? Is that you? You see, that's the way we need to think about ourselves. I'm like the Israelites. When I don't submit to God's rules, when I don't obey God, when I do what I want to do, instead of trusting Him for the blessings, instead of trusting Him to give me what I need, I go and pursue what I want in opposition to His will, in disobedience to His will, whether it be in the moment in front of the computer or whether it be lying and deceiving in business or whether it be disobedience to my parents. If I'm a teenager and I just decide I'm going to go do what I want to do, I want my parents' blessings. I want the blessings that business provides me. I want the blessings that God gives me in my life. But I'm unwilling to submit to His rules. How am I any different than the Israelites in the wilderness? So I need to see myself. And I need to understand my weakness and my difficulty and my failure to trust God. God wants to bless me. And He does bless Israel. He gives them the manna. He gives them the quail. And they eat. And they're satisfied. And so I need to learn that I can't expect God's blessings. I can't be presumptuous on God to continue to bless me. And you're going to see in just a moment, as we look at some of these other stories, that there came a point where God said, that's enough. And He punished them for their failure to trust. Do you want God's punishment in your life? Learn from these stories. They were written for our admonition. Our refusal to trust God is a discontentment and a complaint against Him. Exodus chapter 17, verses 1 through 7. Again, it's about water. All the congregation of the people of Israel moved on from the wilderness of Sin by stages, according to the commandment of the Lord, and camped at Rephidim. But there was no water for the people to drink, and therefore the people quarreled with Moses and said, give us water to drink. And Moses said to them, why do you quarrel with me? Why do you test the Lord? But the people thirsted there for water, and the people grumbled against Moses and said, why did you bring us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst? And so Moses cried to the Lord, what shall I do with this people? They're almost ready to stone me. And the Lord said to Moses, pass on before the people, taking with you some of the elders of Israel, and take in your hand the staff with which you struck the Nile, and go, behold, I will stand before you there on the rock at Horeb, and you shall strike the rock, and water shall come out of it, and the people will drink. And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel, and he called the name of the place Massah and Meribah, because of the quarreling of the people of Israel, and because they tested the Lord by saying, is the Lord among us or not? You see the real sin there? Is the Lord among us or not? That's what they were saying. And what more did the Lord need to do to show them that He was among them? And yet they complained against Moses. They complained against the Lord because they were discontented and unsatisfied and ungrateful for what God had done. Now, you might say, to a degree, I understand that, because they're thirsty. And we're not just talking here about being thirsty a little. We're talking about being worried or concerned that I'm going to die of thirst. So that's, I get that. There's an extreme situation potentially there. But then remember what has happened and remember what God has done for them. And it's only been a short period of time and they forget all of that and complain against the Lord. Complain against Moses. Is the Lord among us or not? Well, He shouldn't be. He shouldn't be the way you're thinking, the way you're acting. He shouldn't be among you. And it's only because of His grace and His mercy and His care for you that He would be among you. But they're thinking so arrogantly and complaining against Him. And so the real problem was their lack of trust in God. But the ingrates, and I love that word. You feel like saying that, you know, you ingrate. You ingrate. And that's what God must think of us at times. You ingrate. Don't you know what I've done for you? Don't you know how I blessed you? And all you want is more. Or you're unhappy with what I've given you. Or it's not what you wanted. You didn't get the answer. Or you're seeking to go your own way and you're not even consulting with me. And you don't even care what I think. You ingrate. That's the way I would feel, I suppose. It may be even that I felt that way at times with my own children. And my dad, no doubt, had every reason to feel that way with me. You ingrate. You realize all I've done for you? You realize what I've sacrificed for you? And you want to challenge me and test me and disobey me and ask whether or not I care for you and love you, you ingrate. And that's the way I think God is looking at the people of Israel. They're murmuring, muttering, complaining ungratefully against God because they don't trust Him. The next story, Numbers chapter 11. Now, we see God's anger very strongly and a plague that comes among them. Numbers 11, verses 1 through 3. Now, when the people complained, it displeased the Lord, for the Lord heard it and His anger was aroused. And so the fire of the Lord burned among them and consumed them in the outskirts of the camp. And the people cried out to Moses. And when Moses prayed to the Lord, the fire was quenched. And so he called the name of the place Taberah, because the fire of the Lord had burned among them. Numbers 11, verse 4. Now the mixed multitude who were among them yielded to intense craving. So the children of Israel also wept again and said, "Who will give us meat to eat? We remember the fish which we ate in Egypt and the cucumbers and the melons and the leeks and the onions and the garlic. But now our whole being is dried up and there's nothing at all except this manna before our eyes." Whew. Gives me the chills just to think about how God must have heard that. All we got is this manna before our eyes. Oh my. Have you ever felt that way? I want more. I deserve more. I'm not happy with what I have. All I've got is this. Other people have all these other things. All I have is this. And we complain, we're unhappy, we're discontented, we're not satisfied. Instead of being filled with joy, instead of being grateful, instead of trusting God that He's providing everything we need, trusting Him that He knows what's best for us, trusting Him to provide everything to get us to the ultimate destination, we get our focus on the things of this world and we don't have what we want and we pursue it with all of our gusto. And when we don't have it, we complain about it. We're discontented. We're covetous. And God is angry with us. He's angry with us. He brought fire upon them and consumed them. Later on in this chapter, He's going to bring a plague upon them after He gives them all the meat that they could possibly eat, sends all the quail to them. And while the meat is between their teeth as they're greedily gobbling up all the meat, a plague bursts out among them. And hundreds, thousands are consumed by this plague of God. Do you realize what happened? God executed His justice, which is what everybody deserves. And He blesses us constantly with mercy and grace and patience and long-suffering, and He puts up with us, but there comes a point in time where He says, "That's enough." And He consumed them. Look, we're still here. Thanks be to God. We're still here. We've got time. Right now. That's what the writer of Hebrews says. Today. While you hear His voice, do not harden your hearts as they did in the wilderness. Today, God has blessed you with grace and mercy and time. He's been so patient with you through your stubborn disobedience, your covetousness, your ingratitude, your refusal to obey Him, your half-heartedness, your apathy, your lukewarmness. God has been patient with you. And we're still here. And there's still time. That's the way we need to think. Thanks be to God that we have time to repent and to turn and to come back to trusting Him and being grateful to Him and getting rid of that stubborn, hard-hearted, greedy covetousness and dissatisfaction with what He has blessed us with. Mercy. I just feel so incredibly ungrateful sometimes. I just know I am. I just don't think about it enough. And that's why we're told the new man is thankful. The new man does all things in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ, giving thanks to God through Him. That's what God wants of us. And so because they coveted past pleasures, they were discontented with God's present means. All right, one couple more. Numbers chapter 20. The wilderness of Zin, the waters of Meribah. Meribah means contentions. Moses strikes the rock in anger on this occasion. The children of Israel, verse 1, the whole congregation came into the wilderness of Zin in the first month, and the people stayed in Kadesh, and Miriam died there and was buried there. There was no water for the congregation. So they gathered together against Moses and Aaron, and the people contended with Moses and spoke, saying, "If only we had died when our brethren died before the Lord. Why have you brought up the assembly of the Lord into this wilderness, that we and our animals should die here? And why have you made us come up out of Egypt to bring us to this evil place? It's not a place of grain or figs or wine or vines or pomegranates, nor is there any water to drink." So Moses and Aaron went from the presence of the assembly to the door of the tabernacle of meeting and fell on their faces. And the glory of the Lord appeared to them. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Take the rod, you and your brother Aaron, gather your congregation together, speak to the rock before their eyes, and it will yield its water. Thus you shall bring water for them out of the rock and give drink to the congregation and their animals." Just pause there for just a second and realize God's doing this again. Okay, He's doing it again. Same thing. Complaining, murmuring, muttering against God. "Why have you brought us up out of the land of Egypt? We don't have anything that we want. We're not satisfied with what you're doing for us." Same thing. And so it says, then the Lord, verse 12, appeared to Moses and Aaron. I'm sorry, I skipped ahead here. Verse 10. Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock, and Moses said to them, "Hear now, you rebels, must we bring water for you out of this rock?" And Moses lifted his hand and struck the rock twice with his rod, and water came out abundantly, and the congregation and their animals drank. Is everything okay? Well, the water came out. God gave them the water. But now notice what God says to Moses and Aaron. Verse 12, "Because you did not believe me to hallow me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land which I have given them." This was the water of Meribah, because the children of Israel contended with the Lord and He was hallowed among them. So here's my point. That's what happened. They provoked. Now, it's Moses' fault. The Lord held him accountable. He didn't speak to the rock like the Lord told him. He struck the rock. He'd done that before and water had come out. He did it again. But he did it in his anger. He wasn't thinking about the Lord and about his obedience to God at all in that particular case. He was angry with the people for their constant murmuring and complaining. I think that's a good lesson for us. They provoked a good man to fail. It's his fault. He failed. The Lord held him accountable for it. But they provoked him to the point where he utterly failed in his anger. Young people, don't provoke your parents. Fathers, don't provoke your children. Brethren, don't provoke your brethren to fail. Through your disobedience, through your murmuring, through your complaining, through your ingratitude, through your disobedience to God. We can provoke good people to fail. We can put stumbling blocks in front of our brother. What did Jesus say about that? He said, better for a millstone to be hung around your neck and you'd be drowned in the depths of the sea than to cause one of your brethren to stumble. They caused Moses to stumble. He stumbled. It's on him. But they caused it. And that's what ingratitude can do. That's what complaining can do. Murmuring, muttering, discontentment can do. It can cause good men to fail. And then we come to Numbers 21. And I just want to make a quick point about this. This is the occasion of the fiery serpents. This is when God sent the serpents among them and 23,000 fell in one day. And they lifted up the standard of the bronze serpent, and anyone who looked upon it would be healed or saved and would not die. And Jesus used that example of him on the cross of Calvary. It was a type. It was a shadow of him dying for us on the cross of Calvary with the cross lifted up before us. And we look upon Jesus and are saved. But I want you to notice something. As you see on the notes up there, this was 39 years later. This is just before they enter into the promised land. The generation that disobeyed God in the beginning is all dead except for Joshua and Caleb. They're about to enter into the promised land now with the younger generation having grown up. And so what do you see here? I think that's worth thinking about. Complaining parents produced complaining children. These parents died in the wilderness. Eventually, they all died in the wilderness, but they raised their kids. And that generation didn't trust God. That generation didn't enter in because of unbelief. They were ungrateful complainers. And now, just before God is going to bring Israel into the promised land, this new generation is doing exactly the same thing as their fathers. And so I think we need to think about that, parents, and the way we conduct ourselves, don't you? Our children model themselves oftentimes after us. Our children learn from us. Are we grateful or are we discontented complainers? Now, I want to close with the beginning of all this, really. The beginning of all this in Numbers chapter 14 is when Israel sent the 12 spies into the land per God's command, and they came back, and 10 spies told the people of Israel that there were giants in the land and they were like grasshoppers before them and that they should not enter in. And so they disobeyed the Lord on this occasion. They complained against the Lord. They cried out to the Lord and told the Lord that he was bringing them out of Egypt only to kill them again. And this was the time, this was the moment in which the Lord said to them, you're going to wander 40 years in the wilderness until this generation, 20 years and older, dies in the wilderness. And so they were not allowed to enter into the promised land because of their failure to trust God. They were complainers, ungrateful, discontented, covetous people. And as a result of that, they would not trust God. Now, I just find that to be absolutely astounding in view of what had just happened. They had just been delivered out of slavery in Egypt. Again, bring us back to that event. And yet they refused to trust God. So as we bring the lesson to a close, just a reminder of all of the things we've looked at in this lesson. They forgot God's incredible blessings. They refused to obey His rules, but they still expected the blessings. They blamed others for their difficulties. They coveted past pleasures. They provoked good men to fail. They influenced others to complain. And they refused to trust God. And I guess what I'm saying is, I see every one of those things in myself. As I look back at my life, I can see every one of those things in myself. So I'm going to try to do better
How about you?
I'm going to try to trust God more. I'm going to recognize in my life when I'm ungrateful, when I'm complaining. I'm going to try to listen to my words. I'm going to try to evaluate my actions. I'm going to try to see what my thinking is about why I'm pursuing what I'm pursuing. I'm going to see how satisfied and contented and happy and grateful I am. I'm going to see how joyful I am. And I'm going to try to evaluate that in my life, lest I become like one of these Israelites and get denied entrance because of my unbelief in God. I appreciate your good attention this morning. You may be here this morning and not yet a child of God. And if that's the case, I'm very excited you're here, because you couldn't be at a better place and you couldn't be with better people, and we want to help you. And whatever your need may be, we'd love to study with you about the gospel and about what, how to be right with God and how to become a Christian. We'd love that. Or if you're here and you are a Christian and you would like the prayers of your congregation to lift you up, to help you, to ask God to bless you because you've been weak or you've been struggling or you have a particular need. Whatever.